Around the World in 80 Days by Jules Verne. Retold by Jenny Dooley. Copyright Express Publishing. All rights reserved. Chapter 1. The Bet.
Here's your newspaper, sir.
Thank you. The Daily Telegraph, London, Wednesday, the 2nd of October, 1872. Bank of England robbed. Daring robbery puzzles London police. £55,000 mysteriously disappeared from the cashier's desk at the Bank of England on Monday, September the 30th. The robbery was discovered when the cashier returned to his desk after serving a customer. Since there were no guards in the room, no one actually witnessed the crime. However, other clerks and customers noticed a well-dressed young gentleman enter and leave the room. Police believe this may be the bank robber, and a detailed description has been given to the detectives in all major ports in England and abroad. Well, without any guards, what do they expect?
Thought Phileas Fogg.
He continued reading his paper as other members of the Reform Club sat playing cards, talking, and drinking the best tea in London. The sound of their conversation did not bother him. Although Fogg was a rich and respected Englishman like the others, he was very different from them. He was a handsome man in his early 40s who liked routine. He liked to sit alone in the same armchair, in the same room, at the same time every day. His routine never changed. But today's news would change Phileas Fogg's life forever. Several hours passed, and after dinner some other members entered the reading room. Thomas Flanagan, a businessman, was talking about the latest news.
Any news about the robber?
He'll never escape. The police told me that their best detectives are all over the city and the rest of the world looking for him,
said Gauthier Ralph, one of the directors of the Bank of England.
Have they got the description?
Asked Andrew Stewart, an engineer. At that point, Fogg folded his newspaper, placed it on the table beside him, and joined the conversation.
The Daily Telegraph says that a well-dressed gentleman was in the paying room when the money disappeared. A description of him was then given to the detectives.
Ralph nodded.
I'm sure they'll get him. There's a reward of £2,000. Any detective would be eager to catch him for that kind of money.
Then it won't be easy for him. Even if he gets out of the country, where could he go? Where could he hide?
Asked Stewart.
Lots of places.
Fogg believed nothing was impossible.
There are many places he could go. Travelling is faster and easier these days. The world is getting smaller. Why, just today the Telegraph has an article which says it's possible to travel around the world in only 80 days. They even show the exact route.
Fogg showed them the article, but Stewart only laughed.
Yes, of course. Travelling is a lot faster now, Fogg. But around the world in 80 days? It's impossible. What about bad weather and railway accidents? There are hundreds of problems that could stop you.
Now the others began to laugh too. Fogg was a proud man, and their laughter made him angry. He stood up and looked at them.
I'll bet you I can do it.
I'd like to see you. And I'll bet you £4,000 that you can't.
And I'll bet you £20,000 that I can.
Fogg's friends looked at each other. It was a lot of money. They went and talked about it in a corner of the room.
What do you think, gentlemen?
When they agreed that Fogg could not win, Stuart turned to him.
We accept.
Fogg looked at them calmly.
Excellent. Today is Wednesday, the 2nd of October, 1872. The train to Dover leaves at 8:45 p.m. I'll be on it, and I'll be back in this room on Saturday, the 21st of December, at 8:45 p.m. After a trip around the world. Good night, gentlemen.
Fogg marched out of the room and left the Reform Club for his home. Fogg's valet was shocked to see his master arrive home so early. Jean Passepartout was a pleasant young Frenchman with curly brown hair and a moustache. Although he was rather new in his position with Mr. Fogg, he knew that if his master said he would be home at midnight, as he was every night of his life, he meant exactly at midnight and not a minute before or after.
Passepartout? We are catching the 8:45 to Dover. Don't pack any bags. We're travelling light.
What do you mean, sir?
We're going around the world in 80 days. Bring my travelling coat.
Passepartout was too shocked to speak. He simply did as his master told him. He rushed upstairs, thinking about the many kinds of jobs he had in the past, when he was still in France. A singer, a firefighter, a teacher of gymnastics, even a circus acrobat. He was so tired of travelling from place to place. He took the job with Fogg, hoping to work in a normal, stable home, where life was as regular as clockwork. Until now, he thought he had. With a long face, Passepartout carried out the order, while his master prepared for the journey. Fogg took £20,000 from his safe and put the money in a small travelling bag. He also packed the Daily Telegraph, which showed their route, and a guidebook with the timetables they would need for the trains and ships. When Passepartout returned, Fogg gave him the bag.
This is everything we need, including £20,000. Take care of it.
Passepartout nervously took the bag and followed his master into a cab for Charing Cross Railway Station.
Cab! Cab!
To Charing Cross!
Chapter 2. Detective Fix. Following the route in the Daily Telegraph, Fogg and Passepartout took the boat from Dover to France, then a train to Brindisi in Italy, and from there a boat, the Mongolia, to Suez, Egypt. The news of Fogg's adventure was in all the newspapers, and his picture appeared all over England. Soon everyone was talking about whether or not Fogg would win his bet. The whole country was excited. But Fogg seemed as cool and calm as he was on any other day. He didn't even leave his cabin to enjoy the view. He simply stayed inside and carefully wrote the details of the journey in his notebook. A week later, on the 9th of October, the busy harbour at Suez was crowded with sailors, other foreign travellers, and men selling fruit, drinks, and other goods. They were all rushing around as busy as bees on this sunny day. A thin man, with a narrow face and a small moustache, stood waiting near the dock. His name was Fix, Detective Fix, and he was waiting for the arrival of the Mongolia. Fix was one of many detectives sent to different ports and railway stations around the world to catch the London bank robber. And he wanted both the reward and the fame. When he saw Fogg's picture in the newspapers and read about the bet, he decided that Fogg must be the gentleman who robbed the bank 10 days earlier. He thought the bet was a clever way to escape. After all, the police description of the robber was too much like Fogg's picture to be an accident. The Mongolia arrived at 11 a.m. to make a 4-hour stop for coal. Fix soon noticed a man who looked lost and worried. The man walked up to Fix.
Excuse me, can you tell me where the passport office is?
He showed Fix a passport with a photograph of the man he was waiting for. Fix tried to hide his excitement. The man in front of Fix was Passepartout, and the passport belonged to Fogg.
My master wants to get his passport stamped without getting off the boat. We're going on to Bombay, you see.
Well, I'm sorry, but your master must go to the passport office himself.
Oh, dear. He won't be happy about that. Well, I'd better go and tell him.
Passepartout sighed and went back to the boat. Fix smiled with satisfaction. Fix rushed to the passport office. He hoped to delay Fogg until he could get permission from police headquarters to arrest him. So he asked the passport officer not to stamp Fogg's passport. The officer shook his head.
If his passport is genuine, I will stamp it. I will not refuse to do so just because you think he might have robbed a bank.
So Fix had to watch from a corner of the office as Fogg and Passepartout got their passports stamped. He sent a telegram to London asking for a warrant for Fogg's arrest in Bombay. He then bought a ticket and followed Fogg and Passepartout onto the Mongolia. Fix saw Passepartout alone on the ship and went to talk to him. He hoped to win the valet's trust so that he could learn more about Fogg.
Hello again. My name's Fix. I'm a businessman, and I'm going to Bombay too.
The two men talked as they watched the sea go by.
So nice to meet you again, Mr. Fix.
Passepartout was not very good at keeping secrets, and Fix learnt everything about their journey, including the amount of money they were carrying. Now Fix was sure he was following the right man. The Mongolia reached Bombay on the 20th of October, and Fogg was very pleased because they were 2 days early. He told Passepartout they had 4 hours free before the next train left for Calcutta at 8 p.m.
I'm going to the passport office for our stamps. Take this money and go to the shops to buy some fresh clothes. The train leaves at 8. We shall meet at the station at exactly 8:05.
Fix was listening to their conversation. He ran to the police station to get the arrest warrant. But it wasn't there yet. This made Fix angry. It meant that he would have to keep following Fogg. He could not let him get away. But he could not say anything or arrest him either before the warrant arrived. After buying the clothes they needed, Passepartout wandered around the city through colourful, crowded streets. He was amazed to see cows walking around, goats eating rubbish, and rich people sitting in carts pulled by the poor. The air was filled with exotic smells, which changed as he went from place to place. Curry, coconuts, flowers, and fresh fruit of all kinds. He walked into a huge market where he saw people buying and selling all kinds of food and clothing. Later, in a different street, he watched a spectacular festival and parade. In the afternoon, the city was much quieter, and people sat on verandas to rest from the heat. Passepartout watched all this with a smile. He thought Bombay was such an interesting place. Later, in a different part of the city, he saw a beautiful temple with a golden roof.
What a beautiful building,
he thought.
I must go inside.
Three priests suddenly rushed up to him and started shouting.
Sit down,
said the first priest. Passepartout was confused as they made him sit on a chair while they removed his shoes.
You can't come in here,
shouted the second priest.
Especially wearing shoes,
said the third priest.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I didn't know.
The priests angrily pushed and pulled at Passepartout. He was so frightened that he dropped his master's clothes and ran out of the temple as fast as he could. The hard ground hurt his feet.
Stop that man!
But with the priest chasing after him, he just kept running.
Stop that man! Stop him! Stop him!
Finally, he met Fogg at the railway station, shoeless and without the clothes. When he told his master about the incident, Fogg reacted coldly.
I hope that this will not happen again.
Fix was sitting a short distance away, pretending to read a newspaper. He was excited to hear Passepartout's story. Passepartout had broken the law. And as Fogg was his master, Fix knew he could have them both arrested. He decided not to follow them to Calcutta, but to stay behind, talk to the three priests, and arrest Fogg and Passepartout later on. As the train left the station, Fix laughed.
Ha! I've got you now, Phileas Fogg. Soon you'll be in a prison cell.
Chapter 3. A Dangerous Forest. Phileas Fogg and Passepartout sat in the old train as it rattled through the night to Calcutta. They rode in the same carriage with Sir Francis Cromarty, a fellow passenger from the Mongolia. Sir Francis was a gentleman of about 50, with red cheeks and a big white moustache. He had lived in India for many years and was on his way to Benares. Fogg told Cromarty all about his bet and their trip around the world. The gentleman thought the whole thing was very exciting. He knew a lot about the country and its customs, and Fogg found this interesting and useful.
You're very lucky, Mr. Fogg. This railway line was completed only a few weeks ago.
Luck has nothing to do with it, Sir Francis. I'm sure I could make the same trip in the same time, one way or another.
They travelled without any problems until the morning of the second day. Then, the train whistle blew, and the train slowed down and stopped. The conductor announced,
"Passengers will get out here."
Sir Francis turned to the conductor in surprise.
What do you mean?
The line ends here, sir. There's another 50 miles to be laid.
But the newspapers said the railway was completed.
They were wrong, sir. All passengers know they must find their own way from Kolbe to Allahabad. From there, they can catch the next train to Calcutta.
The three men got off the train and walked towards the village.
What are we going to do now?
Said Cromarty. Fogg was a man who would not let anything get in his way. He looked at Cromarty and smiled.
My dear Sir Francis, I have been challenged to get around the world in 80 days, and that's exactly what I'm going to do.
Passepartout then noticed a man riding an elephant and pointed him out to Fogg. Fogg immediately walked up to him.
May I buy your elephant?
It's not for sale.
I'll give you £2,000.
Passepartout and Cromarty were shocked.
You can't buy an elephant,
said Cromarty.
It's madness.
But Fogg took no notice and gave the money to the man, who happily took it. Another young man, standing nearby, heard their conversation.
Sirs, I can guide you to Allahabad.
Fogg agreed. They bought enough food for the next part of the trip, and by 9 o'clock, the elephant and its passengers were marching off into the forest. The three men sat in the seats on the elephant's back, and the young guide on its neck. Their guide was a clever young man who spoke English very well.
I know a quicker way through the forest. It will cut 20 miles out of your journey,
he said, pointing away. Fogg agreed to the idea, and they travelled on until nightfall. Then they stopped to rest until the next day. Passepartout shivered with fear as the others were sleeping. He felt butterflies in his stomach as he listened to all the noises around him. The buzzing of insects, the growling of a lion or tiger, the hissing of a snake. But watching his master sleeping like a baby made him feel safe. And finally, he too slept. Next day, they started at dawn and followed the advice of their guide.
The people in this area are very wild and do not respect the English laws. We must stay away from their villages and towns if we want to be safe.
They continued without any problems and were only about 4 hours from Allahabad when they suddenly heard a strange sound coming through the trees. The elephant was frightened and would not go further. The man got off, and the young guide tied the elephant to a tree. Carefully, they crept behind some bushes until they could see what was happening. The sound grew louder. Now they could see a line of men marching and playing strange instruments. They were carrying a young Indian woman who was tied to a wooden platform on their shoulders. The young woman was next to a dead body, covered by a large red cloth. Cromarty looked sad.
Asati!
The young guide nodded.
What's that?
Asked Fogg.
In India, the dead are burnt, not buried. It is a custom here that the wife of a dead man is burnt with him as a gift to the gods.
That's terrible,
cried Passepartout. Sir Francis nodded and explained.
These sacrifices are illegal in parts of India controlled by the English, but I'm afraid we have no power in this savage territory.
Usually wives choose to die with their husbands, but in this case it is not so,
added the young guide.
What do you mean?
Asked Fogg.
Everyone knows this woman's story. Her name is Aouda. She's the daughter of a rich merchant, a well-known beauty with a British education. She was forced to marry one of the old princes of this area, who died a few days ago. They'll probably kill her tomorrow morning as part of the funeral.
Fogg walked away from the men for a moment. He was deep in thought. Then he suddenly turned to them.
Gentlemen, we have 12 hours to spare. Do you agree that we must help this poor woman?
All three men shouted.
Yes!
But the guide looked worried.
It will be dangerous. We'd better wait till nightfall.
We are in no hurry,
replied Fogg calmly. Chapter 4. The Rescue Plan. The four men hid in some bushes in the forest, watching the line of men take Aouda inside an old temple. Several guards stayed outside the entrance doors.
Well, we can't get in that way,
said Cromarty with a sigh. Fogg and his friends carefully made their way round to the back, where there were no guards. The young guide had an idea.
We can make a hole in the temple wall and get in that way. The walls are made of brick and wood. If we take out one brick, the rest will come out easily.
They were making good progress when they heard someone shouting from inside the temple.
Men! Someone's outside!
Soon there were more voices, and then footsteps of men rushing out and approaching them.
Quick! We must get out of here!
Whispered Fogg. And they ran like the wind into the forest. As he ran, Passepartout looked back for a moment. He saw the temple guards looking at the hole in the wall. Later that night, the men sat in the forest, unhappy, because Aouda was still prisoner.
It's hopeless,
said Cromarty.
We can't save her now.
Stop. We don't have to be in Allahabad until noon tomorrow.
Fogg replied.
But what can you hope to do?
Another chance may appear even at the last moment. Let's rest for now.
Passepartout could not sleep. He lay awake all night thinking of a plan to rescue Aouda. At dawn the next day, the men heard the sound of drums and the guards shouting. They saw the priests carrying Aouda and the body of her husband towards a huge fire in the distance. The men were so alarmed, they did not notice that Passepartout was not with them. Fogg grabbed a knife and was about to run to save the poor woman when suddenly everything changed. As the guards placed the platform on the fire, the body of Aouda's husband stood up and began to moan. He raised his arms, but the red cloth still covered him. He howled and waved his arms like an angry ghost. All the priests and guards turned around and ran into the temple in terror. Cromarty was confused.
What on earth is happening?
Just then the red cloth fell, and there stood Passepartout. He quickly untied the shocked Aouda.
It's all right. My friends and I are here to help you. Come with me.
They ran to the bushes where Fogg and the others waited. There was no time for introductions.
Let's go. They will come after us soon.
The five of them quickly climbed onto the elephant and rushed off. As they moved away from the cries of the guards, Fogg introduced the party to Aouda. Then he turned to his faithful servant.
Well done, Passepartout.
Yes, good job, Passepartout,
added Cromarty.
Let's get out of here,
said the young guide. When they were far enough away to feel safe, the group stopped to rest. Aouda smiled at Passepartout.
Thank you for saving me.
Passepartout, you are a hero,
said Fogg, and everyone agreed with him. Chapter 5. The Trial. The group travelled on the elephant through the forest to Allahabad. Everyone cheered when they at last saw Allahabad train station. On a wooden platform next to the railway line, Fogg thanked their young Indian guide.
Goodbye, my friend. You were kind and brave. Here's your money. And please, keep the elephant.
The young guide waved goodbye as he rode away. Fogg then spoke to Aouda.
Now that you are free, what do you want to do?
Well, I have an uncle in Hong Kong. I could stay with him.
Wonderful. We're going on to Hong Kong after Calcutta. You are welcome to join us. But we must get you some new clothes. The guards will be looking for you. We can't let them recognize you.
By 10 a.m., Aouda was dressed in European style, and they got on the train to Calcutta. A couple of hours later, the train arrived at Benares, and it was time to say goodbye to Sir Francis.
Goodbye, everyone! Thank you for a great adventure!
Said Cromarty as the train left the station. Next day, they arrived in Calcutta in the early morning light. Passepartout was excited. As Fogg was instructing him to buy the tickets to Hong Kong and some fresh clothes, two policemen stopped them.
Are you Phileas Fogg?
Yes.
You are under arrest.
The policemen took Fogg, Passepartout, and Aouda to a small police station with a little courtroom next to it. A policeman pushed Fogg and Passepartout into a small prison cell that was as black as night.
You'll appear in front of Judge Obadiah at 8:30,
said the policeman as he locked the cell door. Aouda sat upstairs in the police office, waiting. She was so scared that she was shaking like a leaf. The room was silent, apart from the ticking of a nearby clock. She felt that it was her fault the two men were in jail. Passepartout was nervously pacing in the cell.
What are we going to do? The ship leaves at noon!
We'll be on it. For now, we must keep calm.
But what's going on? Why are we here?
Probably because we rescued Aouda.
When they were taken into the little courtroom, Fogg realized he was wrong. The three priests from the Bombay Temple were standing in front of the court, telling the judge their story.
That man came into our temple wearing shoes,
said the first priest. The second priest held up Passepartout's shoes for the judge to see.
Those are my shoes,
cried Passepartout stupidly.
Silence!
Shouted the judge. Detective Fix sat at the back of the courtroom in a place where Fogg and Passepartout could not see him. As the trial went on, an evil smile appeared on his face. He knew Fogg and Passepartout were in trouble.
What's going to happen to us? Will the judge put us in prison?
Whispered Passepartout.
Certainly not.
The courtroom was quiet as the judge looked at the two prisoners and told Passepartout to stand up.
You have broken the law. You will go to prison for 1 month.
Passepartout was so shocked that his face turned as white as a sheet. And Fogg had to hold him to stop him from falling over. The judge then ordered Fogg to stand up as well.
This man is your servant, and you are responsible for him. Because you let him break a law, you will also go to prison for 1 month.
The courtroom became very noisy. The judge banged his hammer on the bench and shouted,
Silence in the court! Take these villains away. Next case, please.
Aouda's tears fell like rain. She felt completely helpless. Fix, however, sat smiling.
Good. Fogg's trip is over, and I've got a whole month to arrange his arrest for the bank robbery, too.
He thought to himself. Chapter 6. Fix's Tricks. As the policemen were pushing the two prisoners out of the courtroom, Fogg suddenly turned to the judge.
Just a moment, Your Honor. We wish to offer bail.
You have that right. Bail will be £1,000 for each of you.
I'll pay it at once.
Very well. You are free to go.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Said Fogg. Passepartout sighed with relief and bravely asked for his shoes to be returned.
After all, at £1,000 apiece,
These are very expensive shoes,
he thought to himself. Tears of joy fell down Auda's face, and she happily joined Fogg as they left the courtroom. Fix, however, was very angry. Fogg was free again. At noon, Fogg, Passepartout, and Auda were on the Rangoon sailing to Hong Kong. During the first few days of their journey, Auda got to know her protector better. He almost never spoke, but he always listened carefully to what she had to say and made sure that she was comfortable. Passepartout noticed the look of thanks in Auda's deep blue eyes and the warm expression that crossed her face when she looked at Fogg. He wondered how his master could show no emotion before such beauty. When Auda smiled, the sun seemed to rise in her face and her porcelain skin shone like the finest pearls. Mr. Fogg was indeed a strange man. Unfortunately, Detective Fix was also on the boat. Now he wanted to catch Fogg more than ever. Before leaving, he made sure the police had orders to send the warrant for Fogg's arrest to Hong Kong. If it was not there when he arrived, he would have to find ways to delay them. He hid in his cabin and spent every moment planning how he would do it. 5 days later, as the ship was on its way to make a stop in Singapore, Fix decided to leave his cabin and try to get more information out of Passepartout. The loyal valet was surprised and happy to see Fix again. When the detective asked about his trip, Passepartout openly described their adventures with Auda. Fix was very disappointed that he could not find anything else to use against Fogg. Passepartout saw Fix several times after that. And at last, one day, he began to wonder about him.
How strange that this fellow keeps appearing everywhere we go.
He thought and thought about it. And finally, everything became clear.
That's it. He's a spy. Mr. Fogg's friends have sent him. They want proof that my master is really travelling around the world.
Thinking he had the answer, Passepartout decided that it was not a good idea to let his master think that his friends did not trust him. The weather was turning bad as the Rangoon arrived in Hong Kong on the 6th of November, early in the morning. Fogg learned that the Carnatic, the ship for their next destination, Yokohama, Japan, would not sail until the next day. However, he showed no disappointment. He had 16 hours to help Auda find her uncle. They booked into a hotel, and Fogg asked his valet to stay with Auda while he searched for her relative, Mr. Gigi. Auda gave him an address, and Fogg went there, only to find out that her uncle was no longer living in Hong Kong. A neighbor told Fogg that Mr. Gigi was living in Holland now. When Fogg told Auda, she asked,
"What do you think I should do, Mr. Fogg?"
"It's very simple. Come with us to London and then we'll find your uncle."
"Oh, I don't want to be any trouble to you."
"Nonsense. You are no trouble. Passepartout?"
"Yes, sir."
"Go to the Carnatic and book 3 cabins."
Passepartout took the money he needed and left the bag with his master. When he bought the tickets, he was told that the ship would be ready to sail at 8 o'clock that night, instead of the next day. On his way back to tell Fogg, he saw Fix behind him.
"Go away and stop spying on us,"
shouted Passepartout.
"No, my friend, you've got it all wrong. Let's go somewhere to talk."
In a little cafe, Fix told Passepartout the truth.
I'm a detective. I'm following Fogg because I believe he may be the man who robbed the Bank of England.
Fix told him the details of the robbery and showed him the police description of the robber. It made Passepartout feel guilty when he wondered how Fogg could get so much money so quickly.
If you help me delay him until the arrest warrant arrives, I'll share the reward money with you.
Never. Mr. Fogg is a good man, and even if he did rob a bank, I wouldn't help you.
Fix realized he was not going to get any help from Fogg's loyal valet, but he had another trick up his sleeve. While Passepartout was in the gentleman's room, Fix slipped some sleeping powder into his tea. When he returned and finished his cup, Passepartout could not keep his eyes open. His head fell onto the table, and he was fast asleep. The detective left feeling very pleased with himself. Now Fogg would not get the tickets or know when the ship would sail. He left the cafe hoping that Fogg's trip would be delayed long enough for him to get the arrest warrant. Chapter 7. Lost in Yokohama. After Fogg and Aouda went shopping for clothes for her, and then dined together, they returned to the hotel. Fogg did not worry when he didn't find his valet waiting for them. He was sure that Passepartout would be at the harbour next morning. But morning came, and Passepartout was not there. Neither was the ship. Fogg went to the ticket office.
Excuse me, sir. Where is the Carnatic?
It sailed last night after repairs.
When is the next ship to Yokohama?
Not for another week, sir.
A few steps away, Detective Fix was listening. Finally, he introduced himself as a fellow traveller.
My name is Fix. I've missed the boat too. How annoying.
Fogg was not at all put off by this latest difficulty.
There must be another ship or boat in the harbour of Hong Kong, and when I find it, you're welcome to join us.
Fix kindly accepted, but hoped that Fogg would not find another boat. What neither Fogg nor Fix knew was that Passepartout woke up from the sleeping powder in time to catch the ship. He was now on the Carnatic, sailing off to Japan. When he boarded, he was hoping that Fogg was allowed on the ship even though he didn't have any tickets. However, when he searched for them, he could not find Fogg or Aouda. He was frightened now, alone and penniless. What would happen to him? Would he ever see Mr. Fogg again? In the afternoon, Fogg found and hired a boat, the Tankardier, owned by a man called John Bunsby. The Tankardier was too small to take them all the way to Japan, but he could get them to Shanghai. There they would get on the American steamer, the General Grant, which would take them first to Yokohama and then on to San Francisco. Fogg looked at Aouda, who never left his side.
I can only hope that Passepartout made it onto the Carnatic. I will do my best to find him when we reach Japan.
It was a very stormy voyage. The wind blew hard and the little boat struggled to get over the huge waves.
We won't get to Shanghai in time. We must stop at another port,
shouted John Bunsby over the storm. But Fogg would not give up.
You're right, but there's only one choice, Shanghai!
Bunsby realized it was useless to argue. and on they went through the wild storm. The Carnatic arrived in Yokohama at dawn on the 13th of November. Passepartout spent his first day in Japan wandering around the busy city. He felt like a fish out of water. He was lost and did not know what to do. He did not have any money because Fogg had the traveling bag. He had nowhere to go and slept in the street. Next morning, he was sitting at the edge of the street, feeling tired and hungry. He had to do something to get food. Then he saw a clown walking through the street carrying a sign that advertised a circus. He followed the clown to a large tent where there were lots of other clowns, acrobats, and jugglers. He hoped he could use his old talents as a performer to get a job with the show. He met the manager of the little circus, Mr. Batalka, who spoke English very well.
Oh, please, sir. I need food. Let me work for you. I'll do anything,
begged Passepartout. So that afternoon, he found himself in the human pyramid of the acrobatic show. There he stood at the bottom of the pyramid, with the weight of 9 other men on his shoulders. In the evening of the 11th of November, Fogg's little boat sailed into Shanghai, as the American steamer was leaving the harbour.
That's your ship to Yokohama,
said John Bunsby.
Get us on that ship and I'll give you more money,
said Fogg. The captain lowered his flags to show they wanted help and fired a small cannon. The big ship slowed down, and there was a shouted conversation over the water.
Ahoy there! Let these people on board! This is an emergency!
After a lot of shouting, Fogg, Fix, and Aouda climbed onto the ship to Yokohama. On board, they asked about the ship's route. The General Grant would indeed make a 6-hour stop at Yokohama for coal. They would use this time to find Passepartout. When they arrived in Yokohama, early on the 14th of November, Fogg and Aouda went immediately onto the Carnatic to ask about Passepartout. They learned that a Frenchman by that name had arrived the previous day. Fogg knew there was no time to waste.
We have 6 hours to find him. Off we go.
As time was running out, Aouda was afraid they would never find him. Suddenly, as they turned a corner, Fogg noticed the circus tent. He remembered Passepartout's circus background, and as a man who would leave no stone unturned, immediately bought 2 tickets. He and Aouda sat through a performance of flying trapeze artists, clowns, jugglers, and then the acrobats. When the human pyramid appeared, Fogg stood up and shouted,
Passepartout!
When Passepartout saw his master, a big smile appeared on his face.
Mr. Fogg!
Forgetting about the pyramid, he ran to his friends. The pyramid crashed to the ground as Fogg, Aouda, and Passepartout ran out of the circus.
Sir, I'm so sorry. This is all my fault.
Time enough for explanations later, Passepartout. Let's get you some clothes and get onto the ship.
Chapter 8. The Terror Train.
You again!
Shouted Passepartout when he met Fix the next day on the deck of the General Grant. The hot-blooded Frenchman was about to attack him when Fix raised his arms in defense.
Wait! Let me explain. I'm sorry I put sleeping powder in your tea.
Up to now, I was your master's enemy. But things are different now.
Aha! So now you're convinced my master is an honest man?
No. I still think he's a thief, but listen to me. As long as Fogg was on English ground, I had to do everything in my power to keep him there until the arrest warrant arrived.
Passepartout listened, with his fists held up ready for a fight, as Fix continued.
Now, Fogg is going back to England, and it's in my interest to help him get there as fast as possible. Your interests are the same as mine, because only in England will you know whether you are working for a criminal or an honest man. So, are we friends?
Passepartout listened carefully and believed that the detective was speaking the truth.
No, we're not friends. But allies, perhaps. Remember one thing, though. If you try to betray my master, I'll twist your neck.
Agreed.
After that, the two men stayed away from each other. It was a long journey, and on the 3rd of December, they arrived in San Francisco Harbor at 7 o'clock in the morning. Fogg said that they were now neither behind nor ahead of schedule. Fix followed the three travelers as they got onto the train to New York. He knew he had to follow Fogg, but he was not happy about a train journey through wild Indian country. On the fourth day, the engineer saw a signalman beside the track waving to the train. When they stopped, Passepartout left their carriage and saw the engineer and the conductor talking to him.
There was a bad snowstorm last night. The bridge up ahead is damaged. It's so old that it would be dangerous to cross it,
said the signalman, looking very worried.
But we can't stay here in the snow forever,
exclaimed the conductor.
No, we telegraphed Omaha for another train. It will be here in 6 hours,
explained the signalman. Passepartout did not want to bring the news of this delay to Fogg. But fortunately, the engineer had another idea.
I think that by going at our highest speed, we have a chance of getting across.
Later, the conductor called a meeting outside the train with all the passengers and explained the situation. There were two solutions. They could either cross the river on foot and wait for the Omaha train to arrive, or follow the engineer's idea. Everyone started talking at the same time. The passengers were asked to vote on what the engineer should do. It was decided that the train would go across the bridge with the passengers inside it. Passepartout thought this was a silly solution.
It would be wiser for the passengers to walk across the bridge first. The empty train could follow once we've safely reached the other side.
But no one listened, and the engineer took the train way back up the track so that he could build up a lot of speed. Fogg sat next to Aouda, who looked very worried.
Are you afraid?
Not with you here, Mr. Fogg.
Fogg held Aouda's hand. The train began to move. Faster and faster, it rushed across the bridge until the passengers felt as if they were flying. People sat terrified and silent. Aouda looked out of the window and saw the river far beneath them. She squeezed Fogg's hand. Passepartout sat with his eyes closed, saying a prayer. As they crossed the bridge, they heard a loud cracking sound. Aouda held her breath. But the train was still moving. Then she heard people cheering and clapping, and saw Fogg and Passepartout smile at her.
We did it!
Shouted Passepartout. Everyone in the carriage was cheering, hugging their families, and shaking hands with friends and strangers alike. The train slowed down and stopped. Fogg Passepartout and the other passengers got off the train and looked back just in time to see the bridge crashing into the river below.
Well, that was a close shave,
said Fogg, and everyone laughed. Chapter 9, The Sioux Attack. The train had travelled 1,382 miles, and Fogg was expecting to reach New York on the 11th of December. They were speeding across vast snow-covered plains. There were no houses or people, just endless space with a few trees and rocks here and there. From New York, Fogg and his friends would get on a ship to Liverpool and then make the last stage of their journey to London. The next day, more trouble lay ahead. As the train rumbled its way through the heart of America, its rhythm was suddenly broken by the war cries of a band of Indians. Fogg looked out of the carriage window. He saw them on galloping horses, waving guns.
We're being attacked! Everyone, get down!
Women and children were screaming, and a window was smashed as a bullet shot through it. Some passengers with guns began to fire back through open windows. The Indian chief rode up to the front of the train and jumped inside. He hit the engineer, who fell to the floor. The chief wanted to stop the train, but when he pushed some levers, it only speeded up. The conductor was shooting alongside Fogg.
The Indians have got to the engine. We must stop the train in 5 minutes. Fort Kearney Station is just 2 miles away. The cavalry is there. They can help us. After Fort Kearney, there's nothing but wilderness, and the Indians will kill us.
We'll stop the train,
said Fogg, ready to rush out of the carriage.
No, sir, I'll go,
cried Passepartout. As quick as a flash, Passepartout was outside, and using his acrobatic skills, he crawled under the carriage. His head was a few inches from the track as the train speeded along. At last, he found himself under the iron bolt that joined the front carriage to the engine. It took all his strength to undo the bolt, but eventually it came loose, and the carriage and all the others behind it began to slow down. Not far away in the distance, Passepartout could see a tiny train station with a wooden platform, Fort Kearney Station. He sighed with relief. The engine, however, continued to race off down the track. When the rest of the train stopped, the Indians surrounded it. They climbed onto the carriage roofs. Guns were fired. Windows were smashed and people screamed. An Indian got into Fogg's carriage, but some passengers managed to pull him to the floor. With each Indian that was defeated, there was a gun to be taken and used against the others. Soon the passengers heard other guns firing outside. Fogg quickly looked through a window.
It's the cavalry. They heard the attack at Fort Kearney. They're coming to our rescue.
Aouda was relieved.
Oh, thank heavens.
Soon a large group of soldiers were galloping towards the carriages. At the sound of their guns, the Indians were surprised and rode away in fear.
Mommy, is it over now?
Is everyone all right?
Asked the captain.
Some passengers are hurt, but not seriously. We're counting them now,
answered the conductor. After a while, he returned and gave his report.
3 passengers are missing. One of them is the Frenchman.
Hearing this, Fogg stepped out and faced the captain.
I'm offering £1,000, that is $5,000, to those who will help me rescue the prisoners.
The captain was not happy about this, but eventually he agreed. Aouda was frightened as she watched Fogg and the other men gallop away. Fix was angry that Fogg was out of sight, but he respected his bank robber's bravery. Many hours passed, and Aouda sat waiting for Fogg and Passepartout in the waiting room of the station. The train engine was saved again and rejoined to the carriages. Aouda begged the conductor to wait for Fogg to return, but he refused. So she and Fix stood as the snow continued to fall and watched the train disappear down the track. They waited all night, but Fogg and the officers did not return. Next morning, the captain was about to send for more soldiers to find them when they heard gunshots.
"Look!"
cried one of his men. On the horizon, they could just see some horses approaching from across the plain.
"It's him! It's Mr. Fogg!"
shouted Aouda. When Fogg and the officers arrived, everyone was pleased to see their safe return with the other passengers and Passepartout. Aouda took Fogg's hand. They looked into each other's eyes for a few moments, both smiling.
"I'm so happy,"
said Aouda. Although they did not say it, Fogg and Aouda knew that they were falling in love. When Passepartout saw Fogg give the reward to the soldiers, he felt responsible once again for his master's troubles.
"No, sir, I'll go. Not only have we lost a day, but I've cost my kind master a small fortune,"
thought the loyal valet as he looked around for the train.
"Where's the train?"
"Gone,"
replied Fix.
"When does the next one arrive?"
asked Fogg.
"This evening."
"Ah,"
said Fogg quietly. Chapter 10, The Last Lap. News of Fogg's bet and his problem reached a man called Mudge. He offered the group the use of a sledge with a sail on it that could travel quickly and smoothly across the snowy plains. It was used during heavy winters when the tracks were blocked to travel between stations. So Mudge, Fogg, Fix, Passepartout and Aouda set off on this strange vehicle in the freezing cold on the 200-mile journey to Omaha. Wrapped in the fur coats they had brought with them from San Francisco, they sailed across the great carpet of snow. Even traveling at 40 miles an hour, they were often chased by wolves. But Passepartout was ready to shoot if any of them came too close. Cold, wet, and hungry, they finally reached Omaha 5 hours later, just in time for their train to New York. The train rushed from one state to the next at great speed. But it was not fast enough to get them to New York by 10:30 on the evening of the 11th of December, the time the ship to Liverpool would leave. They missed the boat by 45 minutes. There was nothing else to do but book into a hotel and rest for the night. However, Fogg was not going to give up. Next morning, he hired a little boat, the Henrietta, owned by a man called Andrew Speedy. He agreed to pay him £2,000 for each person to travel on the boat. But Speedy would take them only as far as France. Fogg agreed, and they set off immediately. They had only 9 days left. Again, they met with bad luck. The Henrietta was caught in a strong wind. Fogg realized they were not going to make it to England by the 21st of December and thought of a plan. He knew Captain Speedy would not travel to England and refused to travel any faster, no matter how much money Fogg offered. So when the captain went to sleep in his cabin, Fogg quietly followed him, locked him up, and gathered the crew.
I know that Captain Speedy is not paying you much money and is treating you badly. I have also heard that most of you will change ship in France. This is an emergency, so here is my offer. Help me take this ship to Liverpool by the 21st of December, and you will be paid generously. No harm will come to your captain, and I will pay him a handsome fee when we are there.
It didn't take the crew a long time to accept the offer. Soon, four men rushed to Speedy's cabin and tied him to his bed. Fogg looked at him calmly.
Unfortunately, I'm in a great hurry to get to Liverpool. I apologize for what I am doing, and I promise to pay you well when we arrive.
Screaming and shouting, Speedy was left in his cabin while everyone else raced on deck. 6 days later, they saw the coast of England. Then suddenly the boat began to run out of fuel because it had been traveling at such high speed. Fogg was determined not to give up.
I'm sorry, everyone, for what I am about to do, but I promise to pay for everything later. Break up any kind of wood you can find. We need it for fuel.
By 11:40 on the morning of the 21st of December, they arrived in Liverpool Harbour. Fogg untied Speedy, who was screaming like a madman.
Pirate! Thief!
Sir, here is £12,000 for the trip and everything we have damaged.
When he saw the roll of banknotes, the American forgot all his anger and his imprisonment within seconds. He grabbed the money quickly and smiled.
You know what, Mr. Fogg? You've got some Yankee in you. Good day.
There was no more time to lose, so Fogg and his companions rushed to the train station.
We're only 6 hours away from London,
shouted Passepartout. At that moment, Detective Fix put his hand on Fogg's shoulder and showed him the arrest warrant.
Are you really Phileas Fogg?
Yes, I am.
I arrest you in the Queen's name.
No.
He put handcuffs on Fogg and led him away to the nearest police station. Fogg was locked in a prison cell. Aouda and Passepartout sat outside sadly. They felt sure the bet was now lost. Then they heard footsteps, and Fix appeared with two police officers. He told one of the men to unlock Fogg's cell door. Fogg came out and stared at Fix. Fix looked ashamed and stared at the ground. At last he spoke.
Mr. Fogg, I have to apologize to you. Police headquarters have just told me that the bank robber was arrested 3 days ago. He confessed to the crime and will appear in court tomorrow morning. I'm very sorry.
There was silence for a moment. The three friends ran out of the building with Fogg shouting.
Come on! It's only 2:30! We might still make it!
The express train for London was gone. Again, Fogg would not give up hope. He hired another, smaller train and promised the engineer an extra £600 if he could get them to London on time. Fogg was now running out of time and money. The train raced at full speed down the track. Fogg, Aouda and Passepartout knew there was nothing they could do but sit in their carriage and hope they got there on time. Unfortunately, they arrived at Charing Cross Station in London at 8:50 p.m. They were 5 minutes late. He lost the bet. The three of them went to Fogg's home. It was over. Fogg spent most of the next day in his room. At 7:30, he went to see Aouda. He sadly explained to her that he was no longer wealthy. His entire fortune was lost on this adventure.
I was hoping that I could offer you a comfortable life here, but I can give you only what I have left. I'm sorry that it isn't more.
He turned his eyes downward unable to face this woman who had stayed by his side, following him halfway around the world without ever complaining. He wanted to give her all that he had, but now he had nothing. Aouda looked at the money Fogg placed in her hands. Touched by his gentle heart, her eyes became moist. But she wondered if his generous offer was his way of saying goodbye. She couldn't bear to think it.
What about you?
Fogg stood up and took a few steps, turning away from Aouda. He was too proud to let her see his true emotion or let her feel sorry for him. The thought of losing her was too painful. But how could he ask her to stay when he could not offer her all the things she deserved?
I need nothing.
What about your friends? Your family?
She asked with a trembling voice. Although they had shared so many difficulties together, Aouda knew very little about Fogg.
I have no one.
Aouda took a deep breath and approached him. She took his hand and held it warmly in her own. With her heart in her throat, she found the courage to speak before he could say another word.
Mr. Fogg, would you like to have a friend and a relative?
Daring not to believe her words, he fixed his eyes on hers, desperately waiting for her to go on.
Mr. Fogg, would you have me for your wife?
Fogg closed his eyes for a moment, then opened them and looked into Aouda's.
I love you. Yes, I love you. And I'm entirely yours.
Passepartout was very happy to hear their news when Fogg called him into the room.
Tomorrow is Monday. Passepartout, please ask my priest if we may visit him tonight, so we can arrange to be married tomorrow.
Yes, sir.
Passepartout rushed out of the room, but when he went to visit Reverend Wilson, he got a huge surprise.
I can't marry them tomorrow. It's Sunday,
said the priest. Passepartout raced home to tell Fogg that all was not lost. Fogg realized he had forgotten about the time differences in the countries as they traveled around the world. They had arrived a day early. So when they arrived at Charing Cross Station, it was not Saturday, but Friday. The bet was not lost after all. Fogg rushed to the Reform Club, where a huge crowd was waiting outside for him. Everyone cheered. Newspaper reporters asked questions, and photographs were taken. But Fogg did not stop. He pushed through the crowd, and when he got into the club, he looked at the big clock on the wall. It was 8:45 p.m. He was, as always, exactly on time. His friends stood up and were surprised to see him.
Fogg, I don't believe it,
cried Stuart.
You did it,
shouted Ralph. The men shook hands with Fogg and gave him his money. Fogg became a hero, and his story was in all the newspapers. He did not make money from his trip around the world, but he did not care. On his wedding day, he took hold of Aouda's hand and said to all his friends,
during our trip around the world, I found something far more important than money or fame. True love.
Everyone cheered. Passepartout looked at Fogg and Aouda. He smiled at the thought of a peaceful life in a quiet, well-organized house. And no more adventures.